Second hour on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody had a fantastic long weekend. Let's head east. This man was in town. He was in town for the Vanderbilt Tennessee game. And then he accompanied me over to Nissan Stadium, took in an NFL game, Titans and Bengals, before heading back to Knoxville. He's Vince Ferrara. He joins us every Monday at this time, 99.1 The Sports Animal. Vinny, how you doing?
I'm good. Great to see you and Lauren and the family and everybody there in Nashville covering the Titans. A few more points on Saturday in the monsoon than in the cool clouds on a Sunday afternoon at Nissan Stadium. But it was still fun. But I'm doing well. I hope you guys are.
Yeah, that would have been nice to have been in a roofed stadium on Saturday, wouldn't it? I know you were in the press box, but for all the fans that had to sit out on that, it was crazy how hard it rained during that game.
Yeah, especially, I mean, it seemed to, when it was time to walk to our cars, that's when it seemed to really start to pick up.
Nice timing, right?
My post-game video looked like I was Jim Cantore in a hurricane. Sheets of water
Jim
behind
Cantore.
Me, but thankfully I was under the awning.
Yeah. I want to get your raw reaction. I'm sure it's not a big surprise, but it is becoming official. All the national guys who cover, or national folks who cover college football, are all tweeting out that Hugh Freeze is set to become the next head coach at Auburn. He's finalizing the deal right now. Just your quick reaction of Hugh Freeze returning to the conference.
It doesn't surprise me that would be his landing spot. He's not going to be the flavor for everybody, but Auburn wants to win, and they turned around. The Brian Harsin hire was a little surprising at the time, but at least he had some success. Just was an oil and water fit at Auburn, but. They want to win, so despite any sort of checkered background for Hugh Freeze, they're gonna do it. And I know that he is he desperately wants to be back in the league. So it makes sense, and not surprised. He'll be a challenge in the West, I think, for sure.
I saw today. I was reading where is it Golish, Alex Golish,
BOC? Yeah.
Yes. Is that I just didn't know that exactly how you say his last name. I know he's a finalist for the Broyles Award for Assistant Coach of the Year. Tell us a little bit about him. I mean, I know Josh Heupel gets all the credit and, you know, his system, but, you know, this guy is the OC. You're around him. What's he like?
He's really good to ask questions to because he is very detail oriented and he will give you information, and he is confident about his team, but then he'll say when guys need to do work as well. He's an intense guy. Often if we're in the press box and you can hear some angst coming from the coach's press box, sometimes it's coming from him. But he's an intense guy, but he's a put his arm around you, hug you, and show confidence in you guy too. And they have several of those kind of coaches on that coaching staff. You know, obviously Josh Heupel is right there in terms of the play calling, but Alex Golish is very involved. And I do think it's a team effort. Joey Halsley, the quarterback's coach, is part of that whole process too, of kind of collectively getting everything done offensively and in the passing game. He's a guy that said earlier in the year, in fact, it might've been off of one of my questions about their offense. He said, our goal is to be the number one offense in the country. And guess what? They're still the number one offense in the country, and they have been for a good part of this year. And he's delivered on that. And everybody has performed at such a high level on offense when there were some questions coming in. So he deserves a ton of credit. It's obviously not just him. I think their wide receivers coach, Kelsey Pope, in his first year, did a nice job after Cody Burns went to the Saints. And, you know, obviously the O-line has been a big part of their success. Hendon Hooker, there's a lot that's part of that award, and he'd probably be the first thing he'd say. But he's a good coach, and I think there's going to be some head coaching opportunities for him. how patient will he be for the right one is the question. When you have the accolades and the numbers that they put up, I think it's worthy, and I think he probably has a pretty good shot.
They really focused in on the relationship between Hooker and Milton on the broadcast. I know that's not a surprise to you. No. Joe Milton, as we talked about last week, I mean, he honestly looked exactly what I thought he would look like. Some nice throws, and then throws you go, holy crap. What did you make overall of Joe Milton's performance? It really, and I know it really wasn't about him. It was really how dominant they were in the run game, but what did you think of his performance?
Well, first, to set it up, because you kind of alluded to that I would know about it, Joe Milton was my Vol Network pregame player interview going into the game, and I think I was the only one that had a chance to talk to him, and that's one of the things that he really harped on is the all of the help that Hendon Hooker has given him, and those guys are inseparable all the time. They are side by side. They are roommates. He said Hendon Hooker would quiz him at night and wouldn't get a lot of sleep because he's trying to help him. And he was their biggest fan, and saying, you know, that welcome to the Joe Show, and he's going to ball out and all those kind of things. So and he was around the team as well. He saw him in the pregame. They were dancing, and he was hyping him up. So it was very helpful for the whole team, not just Joe Milton, that Hendon Hooker was there. As far as Milton's performance, yeah, he missed on some details. I think at least four, maybe five deep shots that he missed on that could have been long touchdowns. And that's what we saw early in the year last year. We haven't seen as much of it in his relief duties earlier this year. He did hit on the long ball to Haya, and that's the one he kind of put some air under it. There was another one he was on the money to Ramel Keaton that Keaton dropped. So that he did connect on that one. But overall, those misses in big games against higher quality opponents, it gets you beat. And so I think it was obviously plenty good. I still think he's a little bit better in the overall, all the factors involved as a quarterback. But, man, those misses, I can't be that way if he's going to be the guy from the jump. So good enough right now, but I don't know about good enough for this team to sustain upper part of the conference success if he's going to be the starting quarterback next year. That's got to be something, whether he mentioned maybe being, you know, too hyped up or energetic or whatever. That he's got to get an off-speed pitch and not just throw the triple-digit fastball all the time.
Josh Heupel made a point to talk about the culture after the game and post-game. You know, the people are questioning their culture. Of course, we all know the reports that were out there, you know, swirling all week about Jeremy Banks and why he didn't play and all of that. Were you surprised by that? What did you make of how Josh Heupel really wanted to touch on that after a big win?
Well, I think he felt like the way the players played, that it really validated what he felt that they had within those walls, that there wasn't an issue, that people were making too big of a deal about the Hooker versus Banks deal. And, you know, you could call it people call it an incident. You know, I think it's, you know, maybe the two guys getting a little bit heated. My understanding was just his bank stepping on the tee in the locker room, which is what no one's allowed to do. And I think Hooker wanted to make him accountable for that. And Banks didn't like it. And so Milton stepped between them. I think that's kind of what we're talking about. We're not talking about them fighting and, you know, everybody on the team is taking sides, that kind of thing. I think because Banks admitted that he missed a practice, I think that was about him, you know, missing a practice, not about that incident. The incident was after the fact. So I do think too much was made of it. But look, I said it during the week. I think I said it to you guys. This was going to be a game that, regardless of all that, was going to be a test of the culture inside those walls at UT in that football program. If they came out and they looked disinterested and they lost that game or even looked bad in a win, I think it would be very fair to question what's going on in their Banks incident or not. So I do think that they answered that, and I think – Josh Heupel wanted to reiterate, and for recruiting, because you know people in this conference and throughout are going to try to negatively recruit that kind of stuff. And guess what they're going to do this week? Guess what's coming up soon in a couple of weeks with the early signing period is recruiting hot and heavy. So that was one, he felt good about how they validated what they've got. Two, that was a move for recruiting, both smart, and I think the team did answer those questions.
Hey, Vince, a quick question for you about the Vols going forward here. The Orange Bowl versus the Sugar Bowl with this football team, is there really an advantage one way or the other as far as the betterment of the program? Or is it just, you know, you really can't miss going either way with this team?
It's and even the Cotton Bowl is still a possibility, yes. Justin. So any of those are ones with tons of history. They're New Year's Six bowls. So I don't think for the program and the prestige of it, I don't think it's going to be a bad deal or any worse for any others. I think for fans, it's more of a kind of a pecking order. Fans, I think, would like to go to the Sugar Bowl. One, it's the closest of the bowls, so they could get there a little bit easier. Two, it's the top bowl among the ones that might have SEC teams in it in the pecking order. And the reason is because the Sugar Bowl gets the highest ranked SEC team that's not in the college football playoff. And here's something that maybe I think a lot of people miss. If the conference champion is not in the college football playoff, they must take that team, even if they're not the highest ranked remaining SEC team not in the playoff. So in the scenario of LSU winning, if LSU wins in Atlanta, even if they're ranked afterwards behind Alabama and Tennessee, Sugar Bowl is required to take LSU. So that's the one exception to the highest rank not in the playoff. And if that was to happen, then that would bump then the next SEC team to the Orange, and then the last one would be the Cotton Bowl. Here's the thing, though, is even if it goes chalk and Georgia is in the Sugar Bowl, in the playoff, and Alabama, say Alabama's in that Sugar Bowl, and Tennessee's behind them in the Orange Bowl, if Penn State hops Tennessee in the playoff rankings, the Orange Bowl takes the highest ranked remaining after the Sugar Bowl gets theirs between SEC, Big Ten, or Notre Dame. And right now in the coaches poll have Penn State one spot ahead of Tennessee. Tennessee is one spot ahead in the AP. What will the playoff committee do? I think they'll still have Tennessee ahead, but who knows? That would be the one thing that could bump an SEC team out of the Orange Bowl and then push them to an at-large, which is what the Cotton Bowl would do, and they would certainly take Tennessee there to the Cotton Bowl. That's why all three of those bowls are still in play, and if Tennessee happens to be ahead of Alabama and Georgia wins, then it would be Tennessee in the Sugar Bowl, but that's probably the least likely of the three scenarios.
Is this whole debate about who should be ranked higher, Tennessee versus Alabama at this point, is this really more pride or what is it that's behind this exactly as far as this debate is concerned?
Look, this is, as you guys know, this is a proud fan base that expresses its opinion. And things are going well this year, so why not? It's about principle, I think, to a lot of them. You can call it pride also. And it's also the narrative that a lot of people have throughout this league and, frankly, in around the country, that everything favors Alabama. And I think when you compare a lot of what the criteria is that they allegedly look at, Tennessee's got checks all those boxes over Alabama. So the only thing that Alabama really has an advantage on over Tennessee is quality of losses. And to me, it should be about wins. Who you beat, the quality of those wins, and then what is your schedule like? Who had the toughest road, including cupcakes? so like opportunities to lose. Like who even has a game on their schedule? That does one team have less games that are even threats for them to possibly lose? So I think the wins and then the strength of the schedule, top 25 wins, upper end wins. Tennessee has will have three of those, and Alabama, if Mississippi State gets in, that'll be their best win. So I'm sorry, just because you have close losses, to me isn't better than, oh, Tennessee's loss is so bad, then they act like it's an extra loss. And that's not an extra loss. So it's about the wins to me. Common opponents in Tennessee's favor, head-to-head, obviously, which should not be the absolute to me, but it's a difference maker. And it's one of the other check marks in Tennessee's favor. So I don't think it's going to go the other way. I think it will still be Alabama. But I think it should be Tennessee, and it's the principle of it, I think, for a lot of fans, and just want to be higher in the SEC pecking order like Tennessee fans believe they should be.
Last thing real quick, Vols basketball, men's, ended on a high note down in the Bahamas. That was quite a beatdown of Kansas there for the championship game. They were in control the whole time.
Beatdown and lockdown. Man, that defense is really good for Tennessee, and really without Josiah Jordan James, too, who arguably is their best and most versatile defender, too. Santiago Vescovi, SEC Player of the Week, and you had different guys contributing in the semifinal game against USC. Five-star freshman Julian Phillips, career-high 9, 26 points. And, man, he's the most advanced freshman Rick Barnes has had at Tennessee. There's been some really good ones. That kid... He gets better every time we see him, and there are some real nice upside with him. So, yeah, really good start. They really took that Colorado loss to heart, and they've been excellent ever since. So moved up to 13 in the poll, in the AP poll this week as well.
Vince, good stuff as always. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you on Friday.
All right, looking forward to it. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Vince Ferrara, 99.1, the sports animal.